We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 114. We have a jam-packed show today, lots of stuff to talk about, which, Scott, is pretty surprising considering the Yankees and baseball is still in that sort of dead period as the NFL playoffs are going on. Not much is happening in Major League Baseball, but we haven't done a normal show in a while. We were just saying, last week we had Blake Rutherford on, a couple weeks ago we had Tyler Wade on, so hasn't just been you and me for a full hour in a long time.
All these guys, all these players keep coming and be like, yo, can we come on your show? I'm like, you know, we need to do one more. You know, we need to get back to our normal schedule and just do a show. So you need to give us some time. They're coming on pretty strong. So I don't know. It's a little desperate from the Yankees players, I guess.
I agree.
It's strange.
It's good to get back to our roots.
It's awkward. But yeah, no, it's good. We haven't done this in a while, so I'm glad to spend an hour talking about some stuff. We actually do have a lot of stuff to talk about, so I'm excited for the show.
Yeah, just quickly about the interviews with Tyler and Blake. We've received a lot of good feedback, and that's awesome to hear from everyone. I actually finally went back and listened to those interviews, and really enjoyable guys, two young guys to talk about. I mean, Blake is 19 years old. It's insane how young he is. And the fact that he could be in the majors within the next calendar year is pretty insane. So just want to reiterate, thanks again to both of those guys, and they were fun interviews.
Yeah, and if you haven't noticed also over the past, I don't know, I'd say 3 to 4 weeks, and going back to our Frazier interview, when did we interview Clint? November?
Yeah, somewhere around there. Early
in November. All these stories that you're seeing, like the Post and the Daily News write about and everything, we had those stories. Everybody who listens to our show knew those stories like 2 months before they were written in the New York paper. So
yeah, we just dropped the ball and didn't write about them.
Yeah, as we learn to take advantage of those things from quotes that are given to us directly. But yeah, you know, I'm just glad our audience got to know all the frozen yogurt story before anybody else did.
Speaking of quotes and everything, Bronx Pinstripes attended the Yankees winter warm-up event. It was the first inaugural event last week in Manhattan. Where was it? Times Square and then at the stadium and Hard Rock Cafe? Is that where it was?
It was all over the place. They had a bunch of locations throughout New York that they took these guys to. They went, you know, they did some volunteering. That on Tuesday night is the event that I went to. By the way, this was, everybody needs to just to like, give a round of applause to the fan based website that gets credentialed going to meet the Yankees. We finally got to that point. Yeah, so that's a big step for Bronx Pinstripes and all of you guys, because, you know, without your support, we never would have gotten to that point. But yeah, the Yankees actually invited us to that, which was awesome, and it was a very big step forward for us. Hopefully they get that bug and start inviting us to a lot more stuff.
Yeah, my favorite part, you and Rich's stories about the events are a couple of baseball writers for some national newspapers that will go unnamed, maybe giving the stink eye that a fan website got credentialed to this event.
Potentially.
It's my favorite. Baseball, older baseball writers who are very territorial, it's one of my favorite things.
Most of them, for the record, the majority of them were very nice. Everybody was really cool, and very nice. There's my PC answer, but yes, it was a lot of fun. It was cool.
Names being named.
It was cool to be behind the scenes and just kind of see you know, how that whole world operates, because that's my first time. I mean, I asked Starlin Castro a question with you know the microphones and recorders in the player's face. So I put on my personal Instagram that Starlin Castro will always be my first. So he will always be that to me.
Bevan get jealous?
But she was a little bit jealous, yeah. But yeah, you know, it was really cool. It was kind of eye-opening. It kind of got me excited and wants me to push even further for what we're doing here and really make some history, because I think that's what we're doing. We're trying to push the envelope a little bit.
Yeah, and I know the three of us, you, me, and Rich, were writing and working our balls off last week to get those stories out. It was honestly one of the most I've written in a week at Bronx Pinstripes in the five, almost 6 years that I've been associated with the website.
Yeah, it was fun, man. And I tell you, the Yankees had a unique opportunity, I think, with this winter warm-up thing. People were making fun of it a little bit, kind of mocking the Yankees for putting on a PR display. But you know what? They are new players. A lot of these guys, well, everybody but Starlin Castro, for the majority of the time. I think the last day they had Chase Headley and then CeCe Sabathia. But the majority of the time, they were all new guys. Yep. Some of them not even in the majors yet, but Matt Holliday was there. And then they're pushing them around to meet to New York. And yes, of course it's some PR because that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to introduce the players to the fans because guess what? Fans enjoy going to these events and seeing the players out in real life and meeting them and talking to them. I mean, that's cool for us.
Well, it's like whoever's complaining about it can't have it both ways. They can't have it where they want the team to go young and then get mad when they try and publicize the players and get people to get on board with this team. I mean, that's just a natural thing to do in the organization. They got a little lucky in 96 and moving forward there where that team instantly started winning. So, of course, people are going to latch on to all the young kids. But if this team is not a World Series team next year, it's going to take some fans, not fans like us and not fans that listen to this podcast, but casual fans are not going to go sell out Yankee Stadium just because the team wins 83 ball games. Yeah. It's going to take a little bit more. So it's these kind of events that get fans to show up. And like you said, Clint Frazier was there. He's going to be a fan favorite. Gary Sanchez obviously is a fan favorite. And some of the newer, older guys like Matt Holliday.
Yeah, I guess understand the uproar of where people are when they're talking about this and talking down a bit. It just doesn't make sense to me. It's something cool for the fans. Obviously, the Yankees want to tout their guys. I think one of the coolest moments on Tuesday night when I was there was they did the and this was on Yankees.com. I think they were live streaming it as well, but it was basically a panel and Ryan Rucco was asking them the questions. And Gleyber Torres had translator was there, and he was going through the translator the first couple questions. And then you could just tell he was getting annoyed and kind of fed up that he had to say something to somebody else and then relay it. Like, he wanted to just say it, and he's like, ah, screw it, I'm going to talk in English. So then he gave some answers in English, and the whole place went nuts. It was really cool because you could tell he got the confidence to come out and just use his English. And he was pretty good. I wish more guys would do that because I think it's cool when that happens. But it was a fun moment.
Well, like famously, Ichiro still uses a translator, even though everyone who's ever played with him says he's fluent in English.
Well, he just doesn't want to talk. I mean, a lot of these guys do it for a reason because they don't want to do all the interviews. Because if they know you speak English, then you're going to get invited and you're going to get press to do more interviews and things like that. So I think it's a defense mechanism.
If Derek Jeter could have used a translator to not talk to the media, he would have.
Yeah, that's true.
So we want to welcome on some new listeners. We see the stats behind the scenes. We know that the podcast is growing. So thank you to everyone who's out there and downloading the show and listening online. There are a good number of new listeners to this podcast, and we love seeing that. There's nothing I love more than logging on to the back end of this thing and seeing those numbers climb up. So really, thank you so much. If you are a new listener, welcome. Hope you're enjoying the podcast. You came on at a good time. Got in while the getting's good with these young kids. Listened to a few of those interviews. And if you haven't yet, go give us a review. All the old listeners of the show have heard me say this 1,000 times, but please go give us a rating and review in iTunes. It does help out. And we are firmly in the lead as the number one Yankees podcast in iTunes. So I'm really loving that. So thank you to everyone who's done that.
So a little bit more. I think every podcast episode we're going to do just some of the Bronx Pinstripes updates to let you guys know what's going on the website, what's going on with the community, and just give you guys more, keep you in tune with what's going on with the Bronx Pinstripes crew. So we're going to start today. That being said, thanks to the new listeners. Again, a lot of people are getting an email from me on Twitter. It's a DM. People don't like it sometimes, but guess what? I'm going to do it anyway because it's getting our name out there, and I've actually had a lot of really cool interactions with other fans in Twitter DM over the past couple weeks. So that's been cool. Obviously, spring training, we're going to be down in Tampa. I've seen on Twitter a bunch of people saying that they're coming as well. That gets me so pumped up. So March 24th and 25th, that's Friday, Saturday. Those are the two games that we'll definitely be going to.
And quick thing on that. So I had a panic attack today because when the news came out that Tanaka was not participating in the World Baseball Classic, which I was extremely happy about, I was like, oh shit, is that going to coincide with when we're in Tampa? But it doesn't. The World Baseball Classic will be over by I think March 21st or 22nd, so we'll be good to go. The entire squad will be down there for spring training.
I didn't even think about that.
I didn't either until today.
That would have been very us to plan that in the middle of the World Baseball Classic. But yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun. So we're going to be going to those games on Friday, Saturday, and you know, I've already seen a whole bunch of people tweeted us saying that they're coming as well. So that'll be fun, and we'll get something together. We'll figure out, you know, what we'll do at a restaurant or a bar, or maybe even just at the stadium afterwards.
Yeah, we'll figure something out. There's that deck out, that party deck out in right field that was a pretty good meetup after the game. There was a huge area. So I feel like that would be a perfect spot if people are going to the game, but also locally in Tampa. I know last year we found a few nice spots.
Yeah, definitely. And we'll be relatively local. I think we're staying in Seminole Heights is what it's called, that area. So
yeah, I'm just going to bring my knife for the walk to the stadium.
Yeah. It's not that bad, but it's not, compared to where we stayed last year, it's probably going to be, you know, no problems. We could walk around 3 a.m. with no issue. But yeah, that'll be fun. By the way, they renovated the stadium, so I don't know if that deck is different or enhanced, right?
So they were renovating remember the left field side where behind it had the hill and all that kind of stuff. I know they put in more, I think, of sort of like the party deck atmosphere out in left field too.
Okay, cool. So spring training, next thing on the docket is I have been putting out on Twitter looking for writers for Bronx Pitch Writers. We are very close to entering the season at our capacity. I think we're circling the rounds for a couple guys right now and bringing on some people. If you are a college student and you need an internship, hit us up. If you're looking for an internship, want to do an internship with Bronx Pinstripes, with this show, we have a bunch of other things that can be done, but that's a good opportunity. We've done it. Every summer I've had someone come on and do an internship, and it's worked out really well. So if you are a college kid and you want to intern, shoot me an email, info@BronxPinstripes.com. And if you are looking to get involved more with Bronx Pinstripes, whether you do graphic design, whether you're awesome at making videos, whether, I don't know, you want to sell some t-shirts, whatever it is, if you do want to write, you know, if you're phenomenal, we can always add a new spot. I mean, we're always looking for people who want to be a part of this and have a particular talent. So that's how it started, and that's how we're going to grow. So that's what we're looking for.
Yeah, I just want to be wowed.
Just wow us.
If you do want to intern for the podcast, if you have any audio editing experience, obviously that's a plus. I just want to throw out there that I managed an intern for the last year. I'm a very good boss. I'm not hard at all. She's only cried like 3 or 4 times, so you're in good hands if you work for me.
You can wear a Chase Headley jersey every single day too. And then one of the two more things, the fan shop. Obviously, you guys know that. Been doing a lot more designs in the off season. There's a brand new fan shop that's open and available right now. Got some more t-shirt designs that are in there currently, and I'm adding a whole bunch more in the next couple weeks. So every week I want to give all the listeners a new code. This week's going to be a 25% off code. It's BP Show 25. So all you gotta do is plug that in. You get 25% off whatever you purchase in the shop.
If you use that code, tweet a picture of your purchase to @YankeesPodcast, and we will retweet you from the podcast Twitter account. That code will be good for a week until next week's episode, right, Scott?
Yeah, we'll change it and do something different. But there are going to be more t-shirts, more sweatshirts. There are going to be I'm working on a badass beanie. I haven't even told you about this yet, but I'm still waiting for
my hat.
It's a very custom. Oh, I haven't gotten there yet. Custom beanie that's going to look like the Yankees top hat logo. It's actually really cool.
Ooh,
yeah,
I like that.
It's pretty custom.
I have one of those keychains, one of those top hat keychain logos that it's from my dad. Had it in the 70s, and it's still going strong.
Nice. Yeah, these will be pretty cool. So, definitely check that out. And the last thing is, we are getting ready to join a podcast network. Big time excitement for us. We have been in touch with a bunch of people. There is a company called Audio Boom. We are going to be setting up and getting on their podcast network. They are the largest podcast network in the entire world. So that is a good thing for us. That's kind of a big news for us. We're growing up a little bit. And I want to warm you up a little bit that in the future, we very well may have some live read advertisements. We have put our foot down by saying we do not want to have any pre-recorded, any of that commercial nonsense that you're starting to hear on a bunch of other podcasts. If there is an ad, it will be something that Andrew and I do a live read for, something that we can kind of work into the show, and will be, you know, not very, it won't be terrible to listen to, and it'll be, you know, a good product, something that.
Yeah, and that I don't want you hitting that fast forward 15 seconds button on your phone either while we're doing those things.
Yeah, these are ways to support us, you know, by listening, taking advantage of some of the codes that come out, you know, when an ad does come out, purchasing t-shirts in the fan shop. If you're looking for Yankees gear, buy it from us. Things like that. You can always support the show, support the website by doing things like that. So that's what I'm done, man. I'm done with my updates. I'm done with my rant.
Yeah, I know you said that was the last bit of information or last bit of updates, but one final thing, and I mentioned it last week, but coming up next month, we will be doing a podcast review of the movie 61, which was the Mantle and Maris chase for the home run record in 1961. We don't know exactly when we're going to record it. We think it's going to be the first week of February, so it'll release soon after that. But we want listeners to watch the movie between now and then and shoot us some mailbag questions. Shoot us some tweets that you want to hear us talk about. This is our first go-around with something like this. We're not used to it, so it might be a train wreck or it might be awesome. We're not sure yet, but I'm looking
forward
to it.
We will find out one way or the other. It will be one or the other, but it's coming out. If it's terrible, we'll still publish it.
All right, you ready to jump into some Yankees topics?
Yes.
All right. So, free agency was kind of, which I feel like it's like this a lot of times, where it comes out of the gate hot. You know, a lot of the big guys sign, and then there's nothing for a long time, and then a few more of the dominoes that you thought were going to sign early in the year or early in the offseason sign right before spring training gets going, and they usually end up getting less than you originally thought. Couple examples of that. I mean, Bautista signed a one-year deal. Wasn't that dude asking for like $100 million last year? So he signed a one-year deal with two option years with the Blue Jays, $18 million a year. Trumbo was asking for, I believe, $70 million. He only got $37.5 million over 3 years with Baltimore, which is actually $500,000 less annually than Matt Holliday got with the Yankees, which is pretty crazy. And then you think what Toronto did with Morales. They signed him at the beginning of the offseason for 3 years and $33 million, and he looks like an overpayment at this point. So the question I kind of want to pose is, did the Yankees jump the gun with Matt Holliday too early? Could they have waited and maybe gotten Mike Napoli, who's still out there, for 1 year, $13 million? That dude can play first base. Matt Holliday can't. Or they could have made a play at Bautista for a DH for 1 year and $20 million or whatever it may be. That's sort of the question I want to pose to you.
Yeah, I'm fine with what they did because all of these guys that you mentioned, and you know, some of them have longer contracts than Holliday. I would take Matt Holliday over the majority of these guys. Obviously, Encarnacion is a longer term, a lot more money. Trumbo is more years, and Kendrick Morales. I have no desire to sign Kendrick Morales at all.
He looks like the worst of the signings, but. Bautista's is only 1 year guaranteed.
I don't want Jose Bautista anywhere near my team, let alone signed for a year. I want
That's
nothing to do with him. Yeah. Joey Bats can kiss my ass. Everybody should unfollow him because he's a whore.
Hey.
He follows. I'm sick of it.
That's fair, dog. That's fair. I understand that.
I got nothing to do with him.
Yeah. Do you remember? Did you see what the Baltimore GM, I'm drawing a blank on his name. He used to be the Red Sox GM. He said that Baltimore is not going after Bautista because our fans don't like him.
Yeah, no, I know. It was beautiful. It was a great moment in truth. And I'm glad he said it because you know a lot more GMs were thinking it too. He's just not a guy that's very marketable unless you're in.
Oh, I think Toronto. He's tremendously marketable. I just think if he's not your guy, you dislike him.
No, I think he's marketable in Toronto. I don't think anybody else wants him. That's the problem. And you're gonna see regression from him for the rest of his career. You're not gonna see.
I mean, he's old.
The same numbers.
Done.
Yeah, so I want nothing to do with him. Matt Holliday, on the other hand, looks like he's, you know, in his early 30s. The guy is a monster.
See,
he's ready to go.
I knew you were going to do this.
I'm drinking the Kool-Aid, baby. The Kool-Aid.
You're having seconds on the Kool-Aid.
Yeah. This is what I'm seeing.
You're seeing a jacked dude, and you're like, yeah, he's going to hit bombs. Like,
he's going to hit so many home runs.
The dude could bench press with the best of the offensive linemen in football, but... is he going to stay healthy? I mean, that is a huge question mark.
If you're looking at Holliday and you look at his career, he had some weird last year was like a thumb, right? It was something, and then he had a hamstring at the very end. The thumb thing is a fluky injury, in my opinion. This is a guy who stayed healthy for a long time, for the majority of his career, and he's put up very consistent numbers throughout his career. He hits for average, he hits for power, and that's exactly what the Yankees need in the middle of their order right now. They need a guy who can get on base. And the other thing about Holiday that I think goes overlooked a little bit, he's a big dude. I mean, he is a big guy. When you're looking at a guy like Matt Holiday, who's been dealing with a giant strike zone for his entire life, he is the absolute perfect mentor for a guy like Aaron Judge. And I think that is extremely valuable because Judge is entering, like we've talked about, the biggest year of his career. It's a huge beginning of the season for him because if he doesn't get off to a decent start, you know, there's going to be a million question marks and who knows what happens from then. So I think having a guy like that to kind of help him work through some of these little issues, they're giant issues with the strike zone and
200
and, you know,
strikeouts a year is a giant issue.
Yeah. And hitting, hitting the off speed pitch, you're looking at a guy who does get the bat on the ball quite a bit. So I think he's going to be extremely valuable in that clubhouse.
Yeah. You're drinking the Matt Holiday Kool-Aid. I understand it. I mean, I was going through the quotes he had at the winter warm-up event, and it was great. He said he was asked if he had a message for the fans in New York, and he said, "I play hard and I play to win." I mean, it's exactly what you want out of a guy.
Damn,
so
right.
He's also said, "Oh, I'm working on some things in the off season to try and get more lift on the ball." I guess he had some mechanical flaws in his swing that produced a lot of ground balls last year, and obviously you don't want ground balls out of Matt Holiday. You want doubles and home runs. So, yes, that's all good. That's all good. I was fine with it when they signed him because it was a low-risk, high-reward situation. But now what I see what the market has done, I kind of think there is a better fit on the Yankees than Matt Holiday from a purely roster standpoint. Like,
Mike Napoli.
Yes, he would have been a better fit for the Yankees in 2017. And clearly you could get him for a one-year deal, $13 million, because he's still out there and no one's signing him. So if you could have gotten him, he can play first base. He Matt Holiday can't. So,
well, he can. Matt Holiday can play first base.
Okay, Matt Holiday, or Mike Napoli can play a solid first base. He's a first baseman. Matt Holiday is a left fielder.
So here's the thing. Matt Holiday is going to be the DH, and he will be able to play first base when needed, I think. I don't think we're going to see him in the outfield very much.
No, I agree.
The reason I don't think we needed a guy like Napoli who could go over and play first base is because, one, Holiday can put on the glove and go over there and play when needed. But you're looking at Greg Bird, who's coming back, going to play the majority of the season. And then you're looking at Tyler Austin, who can also go over there and play first base. We have two guys that hit from both sides of the plate that can play first base. And I think the Yankees want to give them the opportunity to do that, whether it's a guy, you know, whoever takes the reins and runs with it. And the, you know, obviously the leader in the clubhouse is Bird. That's who they think is going to be the guy. You know, give him every opportunity. And then having Austin there to back him up, hit from the other side of the plate, and then, you know, play that little bit more flexible role, you know, in the outfield if needed as well. So I think they have that guy already. I don't think they needed the first base part of it.
So this is what makes this podcast good. You take the optimistic view. I'm going to go with the pessimistic view. What if Greg Bird really struggles? And I think we both like Tyler Austin, but he's not an everyday first baseman.
I mean, I guess you could say that then Matt Holliday is going to get more looks over there. Rob Refsnyder plays first base.
Right, wouldn't you rather have Napoli as a DH first base insurance than
I saw what Napoli did 2 years ago. I know he had a great year last year.
He had that jaw surgery so he could sleep.
He was hitting under 200 when he was with Texas, was it?
Yeah,
the guy was a disaster.
Yeah.
So who's to say that last year?
Now he's getting sleep.
Okay, he's getting sleep. Maybe he's getting some other things.
37 home runs last year.
Yeah, little Brady Anderson-ish. But
who gives a shit?
Just going to say. I don't know, because usually, you know, if it's for a year, it might go away the next year, a la Brady Anderson. The fact is that – and the other point is that you don't know that Napoli's going to be around for this money at this point. I mean, the Yankees had to go out and get the guy that they felt was the right guy, and I think they did.
Yeah, I mean, time will tell, obviously. It's just interesting what the market did because I remember you and I talked saying that Mike Napoli is going to get 2 years, and it just doesn't look like that now. We thought Bautista was going to get minimum 3 years. We thought Encarnacion was going to get 5 years, and he got three. So the market came back down to where it was at the beginning
of
the offseason.
It's those draft picks. Those draft picks are really screwing with these contracts.
Yeah. So one of the things that came out over last week at the event when Cashman was talking is that Betances and the Yankees are going to arbitration. They're $2 million apart on reaching a deal. Betances filed for $5 million. The Yankees filed him in at $3 million. And I wrote something on the website last week, sort of unfortunately foreshadowing. I could see things getting messy for the Yankees and Betances because Betances is in a bad spot as far as earnings go. Not from a you and me standpoint, but from a Major League Baseball player of his caliber standpoint. Like,
I wish my
salary
arbitration was that bad.
Yeah, for everyone who's tweeting me and being like, "Oh, I can't feel bad for a guy who's going to make at least $3 million next year." I agree with you. You can't actually feel bad for him, but when you look at how good he is, he's one of the 3 to 5 best relief pitchers in baseball. And you look at he's made minimum salary for the last 3 years when he was a top five reliever in baseball. I kind of feel a little bit bad for him. And now the Yankees re-signed Chapman. He's making huge bucks. He's going to be the closer. And they've labeled Betances a setup man. They filed him in. One of the reasons they filed him in at $3 million is because they said, we're not paying you closer money. You're a setup man. So he's kind of in a no-win situation where his value is a little bit diminished because of the role he's in, even though he is extremely good.
Yeah, he's in a bad spot. There's no other way to go around it. When they re-signed Aroldis Chapman to come in as the closer for the Yankees, Dellin Betances at that point just lost a lot of money. I mean, you knew that he was going to get screwed in the sense that, you know, when you're not a closer, you're not obviously going to get paid that type of money, and there's just different. It's a very different level going from ninth inning to the eighth inning. So there was no way around it. I mean, he was going to get screwed. And while people are saying they don't feel bad for him, you got to put this stuff in context. Like when you feel bad for a Major League Baseball player, it's you know, it's relative to baseball players, and you're like, I feel bad because he could do this. It's not because they're making that much more money, and I mean, they're all making a lot more money than us. We get it. That's a thing, but. Yeah, I feel bad for him in the sense that he's not being able to take advantage of his prime because that's where he is right now. He's in his prime, and he is going to be in his prime, probably pitching his best years and not being able to take advantage of that monetarily.
That's another thing is that he didn't really start pitching regularly in the big leagues until 26, so his arbitration has been pushed back. So he's going to be free agent in 2020, and he's going to be 31 years old. And that's for a relief pitcher who's going to have a lot of miles under his belt. He's not going to get all of the contract offers that he would have got if he was a free agent now, which is kind of where he should have been. So that's another reason why he's going to earn less. And doesn't it just rub you the wrong way that the Yankees are kind of quibbling over $2 million? And I'm going to read a comment that I got on my blog in a second, which it argues for the Yankees that they did the right thing. But just on the face of it, $2 million for one of the best pitchers in the league and one of the Yankees' most valuable players doesn't just kind of rub you the wrong way?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I understand the business side of it, and the Yankees are just trying to do what I guess the market is presenting for an eighth inning guy or for a middle reliever. In essence, that's what he is, because eighth inning guys are no more valuable, I guess, you know, on paper than a seventh inning guy, right? Or a sixth inning guy. What makes there is no eighth inning role at this point. There's no holder. You know what I mean? There's a closer, but there's no holder position.
I mean, holds is a stat. It's just
it's a newer stat, but it's not recognized as a position, I don't think. Not yet, at least. It probably will be soon. But the fact that this guy is a local guy too, I mean, the fans, he came up at a time where there weren't very many guys coming from our system that Yankee fans could get behind. And Yankee fans have absolutely gotten behind Dellin Betances. He's a local guy from the Bronx, from New York, come up through the system. He was part of the Killer Bees, if everybody remembers that, when he was a starting pitcher. And, you know, he made it up. Who was the other one? It was Andrew Brackman and Benuelos.
Benuelos.
Yeah, the three of them were the Killer Bees. So he's the only one that actually made it to the major leagues with any level of success.
And he made it in a different role than what he was supposed to.
Yeah, exactly. So the it does rub me the wrong way a little bit. But, you know, again, it's business, and that's
business,
just kind of what
they're
doing.
So the business aspect. I'm going to read a comment from Mexer, who in complete sarcastic tone and wrote on my post, the most important thing and what seems to be completely lacking in your entire article is that this is Betances' first year in arbitration. I compared Betances to Warren because Warren made like $2.3 million. He goes on to say, it is Warren's second. Salaries go up in successive years of arbitration. That's how the process works. As players pass from full team control to free agency, basically Betances' agent is trying to reset the market to argue for giving the top relievers who are in arbitration closer money despite not being closers. However, I think the arbitration process looks to the free agent market to determine value, and the free agent market seems to put a premium on closers. I think that the odds are very high that Betances will close, will lose the hearing and end up with $3 million when he otherwise would have had 3.4 or 3.5. So he's arguing for the Yankees are doing the right thing from a business standpoint. I never argued against that. Not asking the Yankees to, out of the goodness of their own heart, just give Betances all the money in the world. Again, I was just simply saying the relationship is going to get messy. And for one of my favorite players on the team, it rubs me the wrong way.
Well, I think if you're looking at the end result, too, of Betances and where he's going to end up after all is said and done, he's probably not going to be on the Yankees. Unless there's some strange things that happens with Chapman and Betances is still with the team and able to take over that closer role, he's not going to be with the team because he's going to get closer money from someone, and it's probably not going to be the New York Yankees. So what are they breaking? They're breaking a relationship that's probably not going to be repaired in the first place. It's not going to be a long-term relationship at this point. I think they broke that relationship when they signed Aroldis Chapman. That was the kick in the knee at that point, because you're signing the guy that would be your role. So essentially taking money out of your pocket as soon as that signing happened. So it was a broken relationship right then.
Well, Betances better be careful. I mean, he's broken down, is not broken down, but he's looked tired the last couple seasons. They've used him so much. He's pitched the most innings out of the bullpen on the team out of any relief pitcher. I think didn't we figure out last year that he threw like 1,000 more pitches than any other reliever over the last three seasons?
Are we including the new stat that we're going to patent of how many pitches they throw in the bullpen?
Yeah. It's like an extra, add an extra 1,000 onto that. Thanks to Girardi's management.
We need to come up with some kind of some acronym for that too. some ridiculous acronym.
But I mean, he's got three more seasons of arbitration, so his arm hopefully is still on. It's probably going to be hanging by a thread as he's entering free agency.
Yeah, I hope that at some point he's able to go out and get that contract that he deserves, because it's unfortunate what's happening to him with the contract situation, but it's a dirty business when it comes to the eighth inning guys who are not closers. You know how mad he must be looking at Mark Melancon getting the money that he got, and him sitting in the eighth inning, in the eighth inning making $500,000 a year compared to what Melancon just got. I mean,
it's crazy.
Granted, Melancon waited a long time to get that contract, so you know he was also in a similar situation, probably making similar money to
Betances.
Well,
no, but Melancon the last couple of years was signing 1 year deals for.
I'm talking about when Melancon was with the Yankees, he was probably in a similar situation making similar money.
Oh, well, Melancon never really pitched much for the Yankees at all. They traded him to Pittsburgh.
I understand that, but I'm saying he was probably making around $500,000.
Yeah. It's insane when you look at the fact that how good Betances has been. He's been making league minimum for three straight seasons.
Yep.
I mean, and you could argue the Yankees should have or could have locked Betances up after his first year when he was so dominant. They could have got him at way below market value, but still given him more than he would make otherwise. They could have met in the middle somewhere back in 2014.
I guess it worked out for the Yankees.
I guess if you're looking at dollars and cents, if that's the only thing that's important to you.
Randy Levine is extremely happy about this deal.
What if Betances is unhappy and that affects his performance?
I mean, then you're not a professional. Then you're gonna have a problem getting a longer contract from somebody else if that's the case, and if that's known.
Sure, it could happen though.
Well, that'll be an issue for him. That'll be a bigger issue for him.
All right, so you wanted to talk about Starlin Castro?
I did want to talk about Starlin Castro. I've been seeing a whole bunch of stuff about Starlin, and this is not because he's my first. Okay, I know everybody's like, "Yeah, he's your first. So you're gonna
kiss
his ass."
He's your new binky. We found out who Scott's new binky is.
He might be, actually. But there's been a lot of – I think what's been happening is all of the big bright eyes for all the farmhands that we're seeing with the Gleyber Torres, with Jorge Mateo, with all of the, you know, the talk of these guys coming up, the fact that we have so many middle infielders, that I think Starling Castro is getting overlooked quite a bit. And when I see people are talking about him, like, he's not going to be with the team, he's got to do something to be with the team, he's you know, they don't see him in with the Yankees in 2018, 2019, once his contract is up. I think there's a lot of you know, undertones on what he is to this team right now, because you look at what he did last year, first year with the New York Yankees. I mean, he had some pretty good numbers. The guy had a phenomenal second half, and he's known for that. He did it in Chicago the year before that, best hitter in the NL, and we were all pumped up because we knew what this guy did second half of 2015 with the Chicago Cubs, and he kind of did that again, not to the same extent, but you saw an uptick in the second half of the performance of what he did in the Bronx. So I don't know. I think this is a guy, you know, I said from the beginning that I think Starlin Castro eventually is going to be the third baseman, and I still believe that that's going to be the case. Once Headley is, you know, unless Headley has a phenomenal comeback year this year, which I know you're really pulling for, you're excited for Chase Headley this year and his prospects, might even be your X factor. I know you haven't told everybody what it is, but I think it might be Chase Headley. But I think Starlin Castro, has an opportunity to slide over there. You saw the power add in 2016 where he started hitting a lot more home runs. What did he hit, 20 some on the year?
Him and Didi both hit 20.
He projects to be, he's a bigger guy, he projects to be a third baseman. He's played on the left side. I think this guy should be in the long-term plans, at least right now you're looking at it. Well, there's no reason for him to be discarded.
Well, I mean, he's locked up under team control until 2020, so he is kind of in the long-term plans.
What are the details of that contract, though? There was some...
He's under contract.
Is it a club option?
A club option for $16 million for 2020. So he's at least on the team through 2019.
Right.
It's three more seasons. So that's...
But that projects very well with what's going on with the minor leagues, and expecting to see some of these guys up there.
I mean, we would hope that Gleyber Torres and Jorge Mateo are arriving, or at least made the big leagues before 2019.
I think Yankee fans at this point need to pump the brakes a little bit on the prospects for... I'm serious. Because it's getting a little... I mean, I'm excited. I'm as excited as anybody. I am. And I get it. But we have to see some of these guys. I think there's a lot of being overshadowed right now, what's happening in the major leagues. Didi had a hell of a year. Castro had a very good year. Granted, you know, I think everybody's getting sick of him swinging at that outside off-speed pitch and missing by 3 feet. But the guy is a good hitter, and he's putting up extremely good numbers in the major leagues. These guys are all in the minor leagues putting up minor league numbers. This is a major leaguer putting up major league numbers, hitting 20 home runs in the major leagues. That cannot get overlooked, and I think it is. And the fact that his power is translating to Yankee Stadium, because if you look at his splits, home and away, he's hitting a lot more home runs at Yankee Stadium. This is a guy that can grow old at Yankee Stadium, move over to third base.
I kind of equate him to when the Yankees traded for Curtis Granderson, and he was locked up for like 3 years under reasonable money. And then he had solid seasons with the Yankees, and then the Yankees moved on. And that actually turned out to be bad because the Yankees signed Ellsbury over Granderson. Remember, Granderson went to the Mets for like $80 million, and they gave double that to Ellsbury. And if you look at their numbers, Ellsbury versus Granderson, it's no question Granderson's had a more productive three seasons since then. So that was a mistake. But as far as, you know, how the Yankees are treating him, that might be how they're looking at it. We got a controllable asset who's definitely above average to good, who's locked up for reasonable money. And we'll see. I think they're going to assess where they are with him in 2019.
I mean, I think that's true as well. I think more to what I'm talking about are the fans dismissing him as a guy that can contribute for a long time. I'm
so
more talking about the fans than I'm talking about the New York Yankees.
Yeah, fans need to pump the brakes and realize what the Yankees have on the field in the Bronx versus just stop constantly looking to the minors and saying, replace everyone, because there are a couple guys. I mean, you and I were high on Cashner and Didi last year. Those were two of our favorite players last year.
Well, I mean, Castro, if you remember from last offseason, he was the big excitement. We were so excited the fact that Brian Cashman made that trade and got, you know, the young, proven all-star kid that's coming up through the Cubs
system.
Well,
you were excited. I was a little sad to see Steven Drew go.
Yeah, that is true. Cut him. But you know, you're looking at Castro, and I swear to God, you see this dude, and he's got an Adrian Beltre type body. Like, this guy is a third baseman. I'm surprised he's even playing second base at this point. He's what, 200 pounds plus, and 6 foot, 6 foot two. I don't know. He's a bigger, stockier dude, and
third base seems like a natural fit because he was a shortstop.
The glove translates. The glove translates. Absolutely. If you could play short, you could play third.
He was a left side infield guy, so he can move back over there. So.
And he's got a good glove. It's not like this is a guy that he's not deficient really in any role. I mean, he's a good hitter. He's a good fielder. And I think we're going to see a different Starling Castro this year because of the younger players that are coming up. You know, he's always been the young guy. And now he's what, 26, going to be 27 years old.
27. Still relatively young. I mean, it's
relatively young, but stepping into
so long.
More of a veteran role for the New York Yankees because of the youth coming up. Didi and Starlin are going to be some of the leaders in that clubhouse.
I like that he was durable too, because you put his stats in here. I just saw he played 151 games, so durable. I always say that the most underrated stat in sports is games played.
Oh, big Trevor Hoffman guy, huh?
No, but if you're injured, you're not valuable. All right, moving on to some more lighthearted fun. Is A-Rod's reality TV show called Back in the Game. I know you're pumped up for it.
Okay, so you had this in the notes, and I remember seeing something about it, but I didn't know anything about this show. And then I saw that it's on CNBC, and it's some financial something or other with an athlete. And I was telling you before we started recording that I'm a big fan of the show The Prophet. It's Marcus, I forget his last name, Marcus something. And he basically goes and fixes broken businesses, right? And so I was going to look at The Prophet on demand and to pick out one of the shows. And I see there's like 30 CNBC shows that are all basically the same premise, but there's like different themes, I guess. Like Marcus, the Prophet is with broken businesses. There's like some like redneck, hillbilly, southern one version of Shark Tank. They're bringing in other, you know, celebrities to do similar shows. And then now A-Rod's coming in to do the financial side of the athlete. Yeah. So
he's going to help broke
right
ass
into
athletes.
It. Yeah, he's going to fit. It's fitting right into that mold what CNBC is doing. So I'm excited for the show. I think it'll be great. Must see TV.
So I'm picturing A-Rod having like a sit down intervention with these broke athletes and being like, how could you have blown $55,000 at the strip club for the fourth night in a row? What is wrong with you? That's what I'm picturing, and I'm super excited for it.
Yeah, I think it's going to be good. I think we're going to see A-Rod in his natural.
He's going to be.
This is A-Rod Corp. This is all A-Rod Corp.
A-Rod's part of A-Rod's charm is that he's awkward. So as long as he's like that awkward, charming self we saw on TV, I think it could be actually a successful show. There's going to be they're calling it a reality TV show, and obviously the reality part is for the athletes that are getting advice from A-Rod because A-Rod's the host. But I think there could be a hidden gem in this show. And if the producers work it correctly and really they make this show about A-Rod and how wild of a life he leads, wild not like going out and partying, but just how weird he is, I think that could be a fun reality TV show. So like the broke athletes are secondary to A-Rod's awkwardness.
Yeah, see, that's more of like a Bravo type show, though. I think the CNBC
Whatever.
Part
Switch
of
it over to Bravo. You can follow the Kardashians.
The CNBC part's going to make it boring, unfortunately. And you're talking about the I don't really know how A-Rod can not act like his normal awkward self, because what else is he going to do? Not act
awkward?
You know,
he's going to be in like a new $6,000 suit every episode. He's going to have his hands together
twice.
In a triangle. Like, he's really getting down to brass tacks with these guys.
He's going to pucker his lips
their
quite
life.
A lot. Pucker that lips. He constantly is puckering those lips.
Every episode, he will mention his daughters roughly 65 times. So,
yep.
It's going to be good. Can't wait.
For the record, I like seeing A-Rod on reality shows more than I like seeing him in a baseball uniform.
he finally, unfortunately, ruled out not coming back for 2017.
Oh, that's a shock.
But he's not retired yet because he's still getting paid.
Well, yeah, he's got to set his papers after next year when that contract is up.
And also, I would imagine he doesn't want to retire now because it will delay his Hall of Fame eligibility.
That's true. He needs every year he can get.
How about that segue?
That is a good segue.
Bagwell, Tim Raines, and Pudge Rodriguez are the only three people to get into the Hall of Fame this time around. Pudge was a first ballot Hall of Famer. Raines was like his 10th, Bagwell like his 7th. I really cannot get excited about any of these players making the Hall of Fame. I know Raines was one of those guys that they were crusading for. Bagwell, to me, is just a product of steroids. He just was never named in any report. And Pudge was one of the best catchers in the league for 2 decades, but he also was probably a steroids guy. So you just got to be – I just would like more consistency, because if you're voting Pudge Rodriguez in on his first ballot, but Bonds and Clemens are only getting 54%, to me it's just hypocrisy.
Well, see, the funny thing about it is you're telling me you're not excited about that, and then you give your reasons and you talked a lot about steroids, but you're not that guy. You're not the guy who says that they shouldn't be in because of steroids. So is it just because of hypocrisy?
Yes. I'm not excited because Tim Raines – well, I've kind of put Raines to the side because he was an 80s guy. Bagwell was a 90s guy. Pudge was a 90s guy. They were two very good players, but neither of them were the 10 best players in the league at any given point. And I'm sorry, I just can't get excited about guys who were never considered a top 10 player or never – I tweeted out that
– Well, I disagree with Pudge. I think Pudge was the best catcher in the league for a very long time. I think Pudge was one of – Pudge, I think, over Bagwell. I don't think Bagwell's a Hall of Famer, personally. But
no, okay,
I think,
so fine. Pudge maybe was a top 10 player. But
yeah, I think Pudge was the best catcher for a long time in the league.
So I kind of jokingly tweeted last week about a video game cover effect. Because someone tweeted, I forget who, it was one of the sports writers, tweeted like side-by-side numbers of Jeff Bagwell and Ken Griffey Jr. And their career OPS were virtually the same. And to even make that comparison between Bagwell and Ken Griffey Jr. to me is asinine. And I use like the video games as an example. Like Ken Griffey Jr. was the face of baseball for a while. He had star appeal. Did anyone outside of Houston give a shit about Jeff Bagwell?
People in Connecticut cared about Bagwell apparently too. I didn't even know Connecticut was where he was from until all this. Actually, I never knew that.
Okay, fine.
But the thing, I see that a little bit, but I mean, that's also the marketing side of it. I mean, you could get caught up in that too, because that doesn't necessarily translate what happens on the field for a Hall of Fame career. I mean,
it
the guy was marketable.
It's not the end all
pop culture,
but it translates as far as popularity. I mean, Ken Griffey Jr. was the most popular baseball player in the 90s, and to compare him to Jeff Bagwell is stupid.
Well, he's getting the comparison now because they're both Hall of Famers. The thing about the Hall of Fame is it's very difficult when we talk about the Hall of Fame because, one, now we're dealing with so many different eras of writers. We're dealing with some really old guys. We got some really young guys in there. So there's so many different mixed opinions because baseball is so different now than it was 30 years ago, 40 years ago. And when you're talking about the best of the best, like the no doubters, you think about those guys. Like, to me, those are the guys when I was growing up were the Hall of Famers. Like, I always thought the best of the best, those are the guys that were going to be in the Hall of Fame. But now I feel like there's these like fringe guys that are getting into the Hall of Fame. I kind of feel the same way about some of the people in Monument Park, to tell you the truth, with the plaques going up, in all honesty. It's like there's a lot of participation ribbons going on with people that, granted, great Yankees, awesome Yankees, probably shouldn't be out there though. But the same thing with the Hall of Fame. Like, you know, there used to be clear-cut numbers. You hit this number, you're in the Hall of Fame. You're that guy. Now those numbers are out the window because of the steroid era, because of all the things that have happened. So now it's a lot more opinion, and people are you know, pushing their agendas for certain guys and you know, retracting from other ones because of the whole steroid complications or what they think they did. And it's just so freaking gray now that it's losing its luster, and I'm afraid that in 20 to 30 years, the Baseball Hall of Fame, nobody's going to give a shit about because it's so watered down and saturated that it's not going to be as cool and as a big of an honor as it used to be.
Which is even more of a reason why you have to largely throw numbers out for the steroid era and just use the eye test.
I agree. I think the eye test is the should be one. I don't know how you write that into the rules, but the eye test should be something. It should absolutely be one of them.
And I know before we started recording, we both agreed, let's not get too deep into the Hall of Fame because somehow we always get into a rabbit hole with this. Because
it gets annoying. I know. It's like one of those things that just doesn't go away, that's like everybody has an opinion about. And I swear to God, the 80% of the people that I hear about it, I hate their opinion. I think they're wrong. It's so annoying.
So let's leave it with this. Posada is not a Hall of Famer, but for him to only receive 17 votes is insane. Pudge, a catcher, gets in on his first ballot, and Posada gets not even past one ballot. And if you look at their offensive numbers, Posada has a better across-the-board offensive stat line than Pudge Rodriguez. So how is one a first-ballot Hall of Famer and one not even worthy to stay on the ballot for more than a year? And then when you factor in Posada being a leader on the Yankees who won five championships,
right?
It's just like more hypocrisy.
Yeah, it's a travesty to see that he's not going to be on the ballot anymore. I mean, do I think he's a Hall of Famer? No, I don't think he's a Hall of Famer. But, you know, he deserves to be in at least the conversation about this. And I guess this is where the politics come into play, with some of these guys saying that, well, I only see five guys that should be Hall of Famers, so now I'm going to vote for this guy, that guy, and this guy because I think they deserve to be on the ballot longer. And I had a problem with that, too. I think people should only vote for people who should be in the Hall of Fame. That being said, the whole percentage and then you're off of the ballot is ridiculous. You should be able to be on the ballot for longer, not based on who votes for you, because personally, I think the people should vote for people who they think are Hall of Famers, and that's it. Don't vote for people who are not Hall of Famers in your eyes.
Yeah. The whole voting system
I think they need to be able to be on the ballot longer, so at least the conversation can be there.
I actually think the opposite. They should be on the ballot for less time, but you should be able to vote for more than 10 guys.
No, I mean allowed on the ballot for as long, because now he's not going to be on it, is what I mean. They should be allowed to be on the ballot for a minimum amount of years.
Got it.
Not just 1 year if you don't get that vote.
All right.
I'm exhausted after that.
Let's get into some mailbags. And why don't you read the first one? Because I'm a little embarrassed by my last reading out loud appearance on this podcast.
That was bad. That was not good. I kind of want to put in some like circus music behind that now.
Do it.
Okay, this is a mailbag from Andy. I don't know where it came from, but it's thank you, Andy. First time, long time. Just heard the Blake interview when you guys were talking about when we became Yankee fans. My moment was in 1995 Game 5 Division Series when we lost to Seattle. But the real reason I'm emailing you guys is to ask, what are the chances that Gleyber Torres does what Manny Machado did and jumps straight to the majors from Double A? The Orioles had J.J. Hardy when they brought out Machado to play third base. So let's say Headley struggles again. Gleyber Torres is destroying the competition in Double A. Does he get the call? You know the Yankees are not known for calling up guys so young, but what are your thoughts? Go A-Rod. And I feel like that's a dig at me.
Andy's just excited for his show. So I did a little bit of research and
phenomenal reading, by the way. Phenomenal, flawless reading just then. Were you mad? A little mad about that?
I think you've been practicing. So Greg Bird played 34 games in AAA and he got called up to the majors, and that's for the Yankees extremely quickly. But you remember he got called up because of Teixeira's injury. He would have stayed in AAA for much longer, had it not been for Teixeira's injury in 2015. As far as like big players that made the AA jump in recent years, Miguel Sano and Byron Buxton from Minnesota.
We saw how that went. Byron Buxton is a freaking epic flop.
Right. Sano is pretty good, though. He's got some pop.
Yeah. He struggled out of the gate, though. He was on my fantasy team. That's the only reason I know that.
Conforto for the Mets, and we saw his struggles. And Schwarber for the Cubs, and we've seen him go beast mode. So, it happens. It doesn't happen often. It's happened. I was reading something today in history. I mean, there's only a handful of guys that have made this jump and stuck in the major leagues. It's extremely hard to do.
It's more of an opportunity for pitchers, though, right? I don't have the names in front of me, but I do remember some pitchers coming up from Double A that make that jump.
Yeah, so I don't have any of the names off the top of my head. I mean, the famous example is that John Olerud never played a game in the minor leagues.
It's the helmet. I mean, nobody else had that helmet, so I mean, you got to do something else.
But like that's like the only example of that happening. So
yeah.
As far as Andy's question, can Gleyber make the jump from Double A this season? I'm not going to say no. I'm not going to rule it out entirely. I would put the odds at like 0.05%, like very, very slim.
So here's my I'm going to kind of destroy something here. There's an assumption being made that he's going to start in Double A. I don't think he's going to start in Double A. I think that what they saw in Arizona, which is, they say is a on par of Double A. I think they, if he has a hot spring, they could start him in Triple A immediately. This guy doesn't. Why does he need to be in Double A for a season? Why can't they put him in Triple A when they've already seen what he can do, you know, in the Arizona Fall League with the same caliber of guys as a Double A? Because that's kind of the bar of what they say it is. So I think there's a very good opportunity where this guy could actually start in Triple A if he has a hot spring training.
Yeah, that's kind of a wild card I didn't even think about. Obviously, Pete Cosma is in the minors for Scranton, but the Yankees aren't going to care about moving players around. They're gonna make Gleyber a priority, but he's so young. I just have a hard time seeing them rushing him. I mean, he's their number one prospect right now. They do not want to screw this up.
Well, I don't even think rushing him going into AAA isn't even so much of a rush. I mean, you're still holding him back down there.
It's still skipping a full level.
I guess the thing about what we're looking at though is, Jorge Mateo was also in Single A for a while, and we all know what happened when he got the. When he got passed over for the call up to Double A, he's a guy. If they do keep him, I know there's been talks about him being in the outfield. They haven't told him anything that he's going to be starting in the outfield as of right now. He's an infielder. He's a shortstop. He's a second baseman, but primarily a shortstop. He's a guy that very well. If both of these guys do well in spring training, you could see them both make that jump up. So Mateo, at that point, could be the shortstop of Double A. Then what are you doing with Gleyber Torres? Or if Gleyber Torres is at Double A, what are you doing with Mateo? You're gonna have to change positions. What if he doesn't adapt well to center field? What if he is a shortstop and that's where you have to be? Then you have a little bit of a roadblock, a little bit of an issue, some traffic, if you will. And if Gleyber comes out and just lights up the spring training and has a good spring training, why not start him in Triple A? Pete Cosma is certainly not gonna hold anybody back.
No, I'm not saying no. You're right. I think, though, the Yankees will start to look at Gleyber at other positions, second base and third base, because the more I'm reading it, I mean, they love Didi. And who's to say that Gleyber is not the future third baseman, as Andy has said here, and instead of the future shortstop?
Again, see, this is what the disrespect for Starlin Castro here comes. I think...
disrespect for Starlin Castro?
Because I think Castro's going to be sliding over to third base. I don't think...
Then Torres could get some time at second base. I could see them playing him at those other positions just to get him some experience there.
Yeah, I think they will. I mean, when the trade happened, from everything we were talking about when that trade went down, we were even talking to some of those guys that had covered him, saying that they heard through their sources as well that Gleyber was going to start playing some second base, and that's what we had heard. That the two, Mateo and Gleyber Torres, are going to play, you know, intermix at shortstop and second base. So I do think they're going to play him up the middle somewhere. I don't think he's got the power numbers. I don't think Torres has the power numbers to slide over to third base and be a long-term third base guy. I feel like he's more of a gap.
He's 19 right now. He could develop some power.
No, you're right. But I shouldn't say that doesn't have the numbers now. But projecting, I think they don't project him as a big power guy.
Yeah. And as I think you said this earlier in the show, I can't even remember, but obviously Cashman has said that he expects a bounce back year from Headley. So I don't think they're ready to move on from Headley this season.
And from
they're still 2 years on the contract.
And he's extremely nice. He's like the nicest guy ever.
You know what?
You don't like, do you not like hearing that?
No, I don't, because I don't, how nice somebody is should not affect your playing time. Should not affect if you make the roster or not, just because you're a nice guy. It should be performance.
He's a nice guy. I'm telling you. I'm just telling you some facts.
Douchebag. If you're a douchebag, you could that could affect you being on the roster, because that could be a problem.
Zero doubt about it. Brett Lowry would never be a Yankee.
But ever. Just because you're a nice guy doesn't make you an automatic. Doesn't get you automatic playing time. I'm sure Headley is the nicest guy in the world, and I'm sure if I sat down and had a beer with him, he would be an awesome guy. But as far as how he plays third base and how he hits. I don't want to watch him anymore.
I'm not sure Chase Headley would have a beer with you. I'm just saying, I don't think he would do it after what.
Well, if he's such a nice guy, of course he would.
He would just avoid the situation to be nice.
So you're saying he would snub me?
I think he'd avoid the situation to be nice.
All right. Next mailbag comes from Sean. He says, "Hey guys, love the podcast. I started listening around the time we traded for Clint Frazier. The insight we got from Cleveland minor league coach was awesome. I'm also loving the interviews with future Yankees. Keep up the great work. I have a pre- and post-game question. Are you more Stans or Billy's guys for your bar of choice?"
So I'm not a Billy's guy at all.
Well, how the hell do we always wind up there?
Because everybody always wants to go there, and I just go along with it. The first year, where did we go? We went to Yankees Tavern. I like shitholes. I love dirty bars.
Dude, Yankees Tavern, they didn't even have stools. They had no place to sit in there.
There were stools. There were absolutely stools there.
I just remember it being like this dingy bar with no place to sit.
Now, see, look, give me a dirty bar with a cheap beer, and I'll hang out there all day. I love hole-in-the-wall bars. The Billy's is like a club to me. I'm too old for that shit. The music's too damn loud. There's too many goddamn lights. There's too many. I will say that it's entertaining watching people be complete jackasses at the end.
People watching. You can't after the game. People watching. Yeah,
after the game, people watching at Billy's is pretty hilarious because there's some complete jackasses doing some really, really like ridiculous things. But if you're asking me to go get a beer, I'm going to go, and I'm going to go to Hole in the Wall. I'm going to go talk to my boy, who's the bartender, and I'm going to drink a beer, and that's it.
We did. Did we do stands pregame last year?
No, we did.
Dugout.
It was the dugout.
Yeah. I mean,
stands. Dugout had a dirty feel. It was dirty enough for me.
Oh, yeah. It smelled like my frat house.
Yeah.
The only thing I like about Billy's is that they have an outside area.
Yeah, the outside area upstairs is pretty cool.
But I totally agree with you.
It just gets so packed in there. It's like,
I totally agree with you. Like, something about just the club music pumping after a Yankees game is just not how I want to spend my Saturday afternoon.
No, I feel like if I'm in the Bronx hanging out with guys who just watch the Yankees game, we should be in a complete shithole bar drinking beer. Not just like, I can't handle that.
The space at Billy's is nice, though. Like, if it's not crowded in there, you have a lot of room for activities.
Sometimes too much, though, because then I feel like I'm not having as much fun. It's not as enjoyable. Yeah, I'm in a warehouse. But if I'm in like a packed in like shitty bar, then I feel like I'm part of something at that point.
So if you were to rank them, you would say it goes Yankees Tavern and then Dugout, Stands, Billy's.
Yeah, I think Stands is up there with Yankees Tavern. I like the Yankees Tavern. I think that place it's got charm. It's got some some old school feel to it. And maybe it's because the bars I went to in college were like real shithole bars, like real narrow, like just shitty, shitty bars. And I guess that's what I like. That's just it's what I grew up with.
Is Yankees Tavern the place that you walk into the bathroom and there's just like six sit down toilets out in the middle of a room?
I can't remember now. I don't remember the bathroom scenario there.
A classic baseball tavern to me, I think should have piss troughs.
Yeah, that's definitely a good element to have. It
feels like you're really at an old time baseball game, like at Wrigley Field. They had piss troughs when I was there, and that was honestly like one of the first things I told people about when they asked me how Wrigley Field was. It was like it was awesome. The hot dogs were good, and they had piss troughs.
The old Yankee Stadium, you'd piss on a wall, right? I'm pretty sure you'd piss on a wall.
you just piss on any Red Sox fan near you.
There was just a trough and you piss on a wall.
Yeah, not anymore. It's too corporate.
The good old days.
All right. What do we got next?
Next is from Rudy G. We heard from Rudy last week. Also a longtime listener. Thanks for reading my Time Machine mailbag last week. I usually agree with Scott on Yankee stuff, but agreed with Andrew's response on that one. My question for this week: if CeCe has a decent 2017 season, should Cashman offer him a one-year deal? I think so, because he seems to be a great clubhouse guy who could help the rookies develop. After all, Andy pitched until he was 41.
So I kind of have a take. My CeCe take kind of goes into the next mailbag question too, but I'll save it. It's an interesting question because, say CeCe has a fairly identical year in 2017 as he did 2016, he'll get another contract. Mm-hmm. And the Yankees could be in a position next year too, with Tanaka potentially leaving, Pineda potentially leaving. They're going to need rotation spots. So I'm not ruling it out entirely.
I'm not going to either, because I think CeCe is going to want to finish in New York. I don't think he's going to want to go somewhere else at this point in his career. So I think if he does have a good year, I think it's very much on the table for Cashman to, you know, offer him kind of a one more deal type thing, where kind of your swan song, and then that's it. But if he doesn't have a good year, I could see him retiring. So I think it's one or the other. I don't think he wants to go anywhere else with all the, you know, off the field stuff that's going on. Like, do you really want to go and inject yourself into a new clubhouse and a new city and all that crap? you know, he's got a young family, you know, with kids, and I don't know. He's at a point in his career where I could see that he just, you know, wants to stay in New York one way or the other.
So the reason I said that, so let's read the next mailbag question. It comes from Luke in Leicester, England. He says, worst case scenario, the Yankees are out of a playoff race come the deadline. Who are a few guys you could think they could sell high on? And the reason I was mentioning CeCe is because, yes, they could sign him again in 2018. They could also shop him at the trade deadline if he's having another good season.
Yeah, I guess. I don't see him as a big shop candidate. I don't know. If he's having a good year, he's still like anything around the corner is it could be bad news for a team. You're not going to get much for him. I don't think even at the trade deadline.
Yeah, I know, but he has a no trade clause, so that he'd also have to waive that. But yeah. If Cashman is saying I'll just get a very, very low level prospect, if you pick up the remaining whatever $10 million on his salary, I mean that's basically a salary dump if they want to go that route. And yeah, if you're a playoff team, you're bringing in a guy with experience.
Yeah, I mean, it's not out of the question. I just don't – I think at this point in his career, I think CeCe's going to end with the Yankees one way or the other. I don't see them shipping him out.
Who do you see if they have to Luke's question? Who could they sell high on at the deadline?
I don't see very many guys unless it's like Gardner who just has lights out first half of the year. If he comes out of the gate like extremely hot – he's the only guy on the team that I see is tradable at this point. I don't see very many guys that you can look around unless you're going to go conspiracy theory and say Tanaka and have him.
I love conspiracy theories.
You know, talk about that because, you know, that's something that's that could get a serious return. But
that's on the table. Definitely.
It probably is with the opt out there. It's definitely on the table.
The only other guy I could see is Aaron Judge.
Yeah, but then you're going to give up on a guy who's doing well at that point.
Well,
you wouldn't be selling high because if you're selling high, then you're keeping him.
What? No. So listen,
I'm saying if you're in a position to sell high, you wouldn't be selling.
The Yankees say all the right things about Aaron Judge, but something I kind of just have a feeling that they don't truly believe in his potential.
Yeah.
So. Whether they're right or wrong, I would love to see Aaron Judge on the Yankees for his whole career because I think he is a very unique player. He's huge. He's very marketable. He can hit bombs. So I would love it if he's the right fielder for the next 10 years for the Yankees. But if he has a solid, real solid first half of the year, maybe that he becomes a trade chip for a starting pitcher.
Possible. I don't think it's likely because I think if he does have a good year, a good first half of the year, they're not trading him at that point. Yeah. I think it's just totally against what they'd be doing.
Yeah,
the
fans. I mean, unless it's in a trade to bring back someone like, you know, Sonny Gray or Jose Quintana, fans are gonna be pissed.
Yeah, absolutely. The other guy that nobody believes is gonna have a good first half of the year, that is also right in this wheelhouse that could be traded for, who I think is interesting because he's still young, is a guy Aaron Hicks. If Aaron Hicks were to come out and prove that he's Jackie Bradley Jr. And he's actually that guy, then Brian Cashman has a real trade chip on his hands, a young, athletic, you know, Jackie Bradley Jr. like.
When is the Aaron Hicks talk going to end? Can we like put a moratorium on Aaron Hicks talk on this podcast?
I like it. It's fun. I kind of like that it gets under your skin a little bit. I need to find my new bay for next year.
You already found
really
one.
Starlin?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I do love him.
All right, let's why don't you read the final question?
This is a Twitter question from @NJP584. He said, name one player who you believe will do the following. Number one, take a big step forward. Number two, take a big step backward. And number three is won't be a Yankee at the trade deadline.
We kind of just answered that now that I think about it. I'm going to go backwards to forwards. If I had to say one Yankee will not be on the team at the trade deadline, it's Brett Gardner. One Yankee that will take a huge step backwards this year. It's actually a tough question. Let's go with, Let's go with well, Chase Headley can't really go any far back. Right. So let's say Chad Green. big
shocker. Oh my God. Huge step.
Big step, step forward back. Is Luis Severino.
Okay. Big step forward. I think there's like there's like 15 guys you can take a big step forward. I think so.
Yeah, name
big,
one.
Big step forward. I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm going to say Chase Headley. I think Chase Headley changes minds this year.
You're just trolling
and
me.
People will be okay with Chase Headley. Big step backward. I'm going to go on a limb here, and because I think there's two people. One, I think because of the expectations, I think people
don't say it. Don't say it. I know where you're going. I was going to say it too. Don't say it. It's going to put a hex on the whole season.
I'm not going to. Fine, Greg Bird. Possibly Greg Bird. Everybody remembers what he did 2 years
ago. Would that really be a step backward,
came in
though?
Hot. Yeah, it could be a step backward. He did pretty well in that second half of that year.
He hasn't played in a year.
You're right. But people only remember what he did in the year that he came from, came up for where the share was healthy, and he was gangbusters. So this guy could take a step back. He's been off for a year. It's going to be a big role. The guy that I was going to mention, I won't mention because
don't say it.
I'm not getting blamed for any hexes, but yeah. There's big expectations. I'm just saying.
You have to answer number three.
Do the math. Yeah, it's Brett Gardner. That's the guy who's not going to be a Yankee after the trade deadline. And it's Brett Gardner, unless Jackie Bradley Jr. appears.
Well, Jackie Bradley Jr. 2.0 would have to be the guy who takes the big step forward, and then he would be the guy who's no longer on the team. So he would be the answer to two of them. Yeah,
big time.
All right, that's it for the mailbag questions. Thanks to everyone who submitted. Definitely seeing a lot stronger mailbag questions come in, so I'm loving that. Keep those coming. Call the voicemail line at 646-480-0342. Something tells me, Scott, that as we start to get baseball games going on this year, that people might be calling in with some hot takes on that voicemail line.
I just want to hear some rants. I don't know why everybody doesn't call the mailbag. Like if they don't want to hear their voice on the podcast, or
save me from having to read.
They're scared. Seriously, please save us all from having to read. But they're scared to hear their voice on. I don't know. Call the mailbag. Call the voice line, people. Let's do this. Let's get your voice on the show. It's it breaks it up. It's more fun.
And remember that code for the Fan Shop, 25% off, is BPShow25. Use it, tweet it, and we will retweet it. Scott, any last words?
Go get you some t-shirts.
All right. Have a good week, everyone. Talk to you guys later.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.